A very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 9th March 2025, Sunday class. So we will be continuing from where we stopped. We are at page 113 of the second edition Heart Sutta book. Okay, as usual, we will compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Guansiyin Pusa. Namo Guansiyin Pusa. Namo Guansiyin Pusa. Namo Amitabha, 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 Namo Dichang Wang Pusa, Namo Dichang Wang Pusa, Namo Dichang Wang Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa, Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava, Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara Viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majjhapamadatthana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Pajam. Buddhang Pujami. Namang Pujami. Sanghang Pujami. Invocation to the Devas. In this universe in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teachings of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta Chiyakawalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Munirajasa Sunantu Sakamokkadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Itti peso bhagava arahaṃ sammā sambuddho vicchācāraṇa sampanno sukato lokavido anuttaro purisa dhamma sārti satta deva manusāna Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pajyatang Veditabu Vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho Ujjupatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho Nyayapatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho Samichipatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho Sango Yadidang Chatari Purisa Yukani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Sango Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakneyo Anjali Karaneyo Anuttarang punyang ketang lokasati sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, you all can visit that. Then we shall continue from where we stop. Then turn to page 113 of the Heart Sutta, second edition. We'll continue from there, part 3. So, earlier on, before Chinese New Year, I think we covered part 1 and part 2. So, part 1 is regarding purification of sila, purification of citta, and purification of views or ditti. Yeah. So when it comes to understanding the teachings, yeah, this Sunday class is specially devoted to the sharing of the basic Theravada teachings from our Heart Sutta book. And this Heart Sutta book came about because of our long period of sharing over a period of about 15 months, I remember. Then every lesson, there were short notes prepared, then forward to me for editing on what we have covered. So based on that, it became a complete teaching by itself. That's why I compiled it based on a lot of good feedback from Kayamitas. Then we have been using this book as our retreat sharing guide for the past, I think, almost 10 over years. Yeah. Earlier on, we need to get, before the book came out, I think we were using notes which we compiled during sharing. Then we type it out and send it out via email. Then we reproduce it for sharing during retreat. But after this book came out, I remember at that time, the first edition came out in the year 2015, yeah, 19 February. So 10 years exactly. Yeah, yeah. Before that, we were using a lot of notes and impromptu sharing. But with the format that we have developed, it become easy because this Heart Sutta sharing, which we developed over 15 month period, is very complete as far as the Theravada tradition's teaching is concerned. It's very comprehensive and very complete. Yeah. Then within it, we also incorporated some of the Mahayana teaching, where appropriate as it arises, because the sharing was based on the Heart Sutta commentaries by Venerable Master Xuan Hua, which is also my refuge teacher, Xuan Hua Sanglin. So his Heart Sutta commentaries is very good. So when we go through that, it actually took us 15 over months to cover it. Then as I go through, I explained, I elaborated. And what I did was, I was able to connect the Mahayana teaching to let people understand that it is no different from the Theravada tradition's teaching. If you understand the Theravada tradition's teaching, the basic teaching, you would have the understanding to understand the Heart Sutta. Basically, it's not much different. The only difference is, like I explained before, the Mahayana teaching, they are more extensive, more elaborate. But the basic Dhamma, the essential Dhamma is taught by the Buddha, is the same. And from there, when you can understand the basic essential Dhamma of the Buddha in the Theravada tradition, you can use that understanding to also understand the Mahayana teaching. No problem at all. Yeah. That's why after I went through that, I think many people developed a new understanding. They no longer like before. Yeah. In the early days, 2004, those period when I came out to share, there were this very strong, resistance to learning Mahayana teachings of the Mahayana tradition, especially for Theravada practitioner or Theravada traditions Dhamma practitioner or cultivator. Because to them, a lot of the Mahayana suttas teaching appear very different, like completely nothing to do with the Theravada tradition. And sometimes, because of their lack of understanding, they think it's not the authentic teaching. They thought all these were added because they claim that they can't find it in the Tipitaka of the Theravada tradition. But all this, you don't have to worry, because as I have explained, after I went through the whole teaching, I was able to link them and explain clearly that there is no difference. So that's why we have all this sharing. Then after part one, after we go through the first three types of purification within the seven stages of purification, the first three are very important. What we call Sila Visuddhi, Chitta Visuddhi, and Ditti Visuddhi. Sila means purification of Sila or morality. Then Chitta Visuddhi means purification of mind or content of consciousness within the mind. Then the third stage is Ditti Visuddhi or purification of views. So views are a very important part. You don't have right view, you will have Sakkaya Ditti. Then you cannot penetrate the teaching. Then you will not be able to liberate your mind. Then after that, we also went into the Sati and all the other aspect of the teaching, where we develop the understanding of the 12 link of Paticca-samuppada and the 5 aggregates of form and mind. Then after that, we went on to part 2. Part 2 is where where the Heart Sutta teaching appear, where it is stated in the Heart Sutta, form does not differ from emptiness, and emptiness does not differ from form. For form itself is emptiness, and emptiness itself is form. So for people who seldom develop the understanding of the Mahayana tradition, they find it very, very contradictory. How can form be empty? Because form, as we all know, external form, solid form, like the table, the chair, all the solid elements within nature, the building, the houses, the highway, everything that you come to perceive through your senses, they are very solid, very real, and perceivable. How can it be empty? Yeah. So that part, I think many people find it very strange. And some who are lacking in the teachings, understanding, even dare to comment that this is not authentic Buddhist teaching. So because of that, this topic I need to explain a bit more. Then the summary of it is here. Now I will share and go through. So 2.1, form is emptiness and emptiness is form. So the concept of form is emptiness and emptiness is form is very difficult to grasp, and most people cannot understand this. There are also some Buddhists of the Theravada tradition who thinks that the Maya teaching is not authentic because they cannot accept the Heart Sutra's teaching that said form is emptiness and emptiness is form. But for those who understand, there is no such problem, because basically the Buddha's teaching on anatta as presented in the Theravada tradition also gives the same meaning. And here, anatta, what is normally translated is non-self in the Theravada tradition. But for those who understand, the meaning is deeper. Non-self is only one small aspect of anatta. Anatta is when you understand that everything within our conditioned world and the unconditioned world, they are not a permanent, unchanging entity. And because all these phenomena are not a permanent, unchanging entity, that's why it exhibit the universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, and anatta, especially within the conditioned world. Everything is dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. Yeah. That's why they say it is not real. Empty nature of existence, or empty nature of all phenomena. Then in the Theravada tradition, they also have this word sunyata. Sunyata, which is translated as emptiness. So sunyata is also a Pali word within the Theravada tradition. But the most often used one is the word anatta. So you look at the teaching, anicchang, dukkang, anatta, the three universal characteristics need to be understood clearly. As far as the first universal characteristic of anicchang leading to dukkang, the second universal characteristic, it is relatively easy to understand. Because, like the Buddha say, if it's not a permanent unchanging entity, means it is condition arising, causal phenomena. It is dependent originating. Dependent on condition, they arise. When condition cease to be, they cease to be. So everything exhibits that characteristics of impermanence, because this is the nature of the conditioned world. Whatever that is condition arising need causes and condition for it to arise. That's like the Buddha in his opening statement, Dhammapada verse 1 and 2. He said, mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arise, all things arise. And that is the beginning of creation. So after that, the Buddha said, because of this universal characteristic, or what we call the nature's law that governs life and existence, he realized through his enlightenment, penetrative direct seeing, the universal characteristics of anicchang or dukkang, Anicchang and Dukkang, followed by Anattam. Anicchang in the sense that he described whatever arises, there are causes and conditions behind. And the statement is very powerful, very profound. Means what? Without causes, without condition, nothing arises. Because we live in a conditioned world. So a conditioned world phenomena has the characteristic of impermanent because it is dependent originating. Dependent on some causes and condition, it manifests and it arises. Yeah. So understanding impermanence or the universal characteristics of anicchang is very easy because it is a conditioned world, dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena. Then because it follows the universal law, the law of change or the law of dependent origination, we can see clearly, like the law of karma, or they call it the universal order of karma, karma niyama. So within this karma niyama is a moral causation, and the Buddha defined it very clearly. It is chitena that I call karma. Then there are other pancha niyama. Apart from karma niyama, we got citta niyama, order of mind. So moral causation, karma niyama, followed by citta niyama, then followed by dhamma niyama, which is the universal order of truth. These are the three great spiritual laws that governs all of life and existence. Then as far as the scientific law are concerned, there are two major ones, which the Buddha actually classified it very well. He called it Uttu Niyama and Bija Niyama. Uttu means the nature's physical law, physical order of nature. Every physical thing behaves following that law. Then we have the biological order, Bija Niyama. All biological organic things follow those laws. So if everything is dependent originating, following nature's law, then what happens is, if you want things your way, which is not nature's way, then you will suffer. As per the Buddha's realization under his proclamation in the first Noble Truth, Eight Reality. Inside the Eight Reality, he summarized one of them. When you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, when your craving or desire are not fulfilled, or expectation in life are not given, then you react to it, you get angry, or you become fearful, you become unhappy. So that is what the Buddha called dukkha, suffering. Not able to get what you want when things don't go your way, because you want things your way, which is not in accordance with the nature's law that governs life and existence. That's why you will suffer. So you tie this back to the Buddha's profound teaching that say whatever arises, your causes and conditions already said arise. There are causes and conditions behind. Means this is the reality. This is suchness. Condition like that, things will be like that. It cannot be otherwise. You want it otherwise means you cannot accept the reality of the moment. You cannot accept suchness. the darkness of things. You cannot see things as they are, which means you want things your way, which is born of your craving, not born of nature's law, nature's condition. That's why the second universal characteristic of sabbe sankhara dukkhang will arise. So the universal characteristics of suffering or dukkha or unhappiness or unsatisfactoriness of existence will manifest when you want things your way, which is not in accordance with the nature's law that governs life and existence, the pancha niyamas. So that is a very profound aspect of the teaching. Then after that, the Buddha continued. He said, sabbe sankhara anicchang, then sabbe sankhara dukkhang. But the third one, he says, sabbe dhamma anatta. Why did he use the word dhamma? Because dhamma define both the conditioned world and the unconditioned. That's why he said, even within the conditioned world and the unconditioned world, everything is still anatta. Anatta means it's not a permanent, unchanging entity. Yeah. But within the Theravada tradition, most people only use one aspect of anatta to develop the translation. They always use the word non-self. Or not a permanent unchanging entity that you can cling on to, grasp on to, hold on to and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. He said, if you do that, that is sakkayadiṭṭhi, self-delusion, not understanding that the form and mind, or the five aggregate of form and mind, which is, for our case, is a human being, is not a permanent unchanging entity, where this one is karmically conditioned out, is dependent originating, condition arising, like any phenomenon. Based on the law of karma, karmically it conditioned out the form and mind. So this law of karma that manifests that form and mind to come to this existential world is not real. It's not a permanent unchanging entity, not what you think. That's why most people get trapped in this. Then the deeper meaning of anatta is, if you look at the teaching, when the monk recite in their morning chanting, in fact, you go to the retreat version of the chanting book, we will be chanting this. The Buddha always asks the monk to recollect the five aggregates. Rupang anicchang, rupang anatta. He said, form is impermanent, form is anatta. But then, if you look at the actual understanding, you interpret form as non-self, then you feel funny. For human being, maybe the human form, the physical form, is not a permanent unchanging entity, so it's non-self, yes. But when it comes to a table, how can you say that table, which is also a rupa, anatta? Not right, isn't it? That's why the meaning is not only limited to non-self. It means it is not a permanent unchanging entity. Because this one, the physical object or the physical form, which we observe or perceive through the external sense data, they are although solid, but dependent originating, condition arising, It's not a permanent unchanging entity. It goes the way of nature, like this physical body. It's of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. For it has not gone beyond birth, old age, sickness and death. So all these are the reality that points towards the nature's law that governs life and existence. So understanding this, then you realize if all phenomena has these universal characteristics of impermanence, then if I cannot accept that reality, I want things my way, I suffer. That's why the universal characteristic is automatic. Once you see impermanent, you realize anicchang, you will realize the second characteristic of dukkha. Then once you really penetrate anicchang, you will also realize the universal characteristics of anatta. But it's not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why for the living being or the human being, you can say anatta is non-self, not you, not real, not a permanent unchanging entity. Then image. Then the other meaning is sunyata, empty nature. Whatever that is dependent, originating, condition, arising, cause of law, they arise and they pass away. How real can it be? That's why empty, not a reality, like I shared with you all. We cannot deny every one of us. We have been born earlier. Then we never deny that we existed through life until our age, what we are. So this period, since birth until now, it happened. But I ask you a question, is it real? You can only recall them through memory, isn't it? But no matter what it is, whatever that has arisen and passed away is of the past. It's already gone, no more reality. But everything is dependent, originating, condition, arising, cause of phenomenon within the moment. Arise, pass away, arise, pass away. So no more reality. Then the future is also not a reality where it hasn't happened yet, haven't manifested yet. But because of Sakkaya Ditti, we created the illusion of time. We created the past and the future. And through this, we project our thought backward and forward, not knowing that this time is not a reality, it's an illusion. But we cling onto it, we grasp onto it, and we develop the unnecessary craving or fear when we recall them through memory. Especially your phobia, your insecurity, your sorrow, your lamentation, your whatever fantasy. Then those who have gone through life, you experience a lot of abuses, child abuse, suffering, misery. So all this, they will manifest as fear. That's why because of fear, living beings suffer. Fear of the unknown, fear of death, fear of losing your loved one. That fear of losing your job. And there is a lot of fear. Fear of losing what you own, what you have. Fear of making mistake. Fear of being harmed, being hurt. So this fear is very real. But it is through thoughts projection. Without the thought projection, all this cannot arise. That's why the Buddha call it dependent originating entity or condition arising entity. Like I always share with you all, if you know how to meditate using the awareness-based meditation, then when fear arises, you stay with the fear without trying to do anything. Don't fight it, don't resist it, just stay with it. Maintain awareness with it. Then what happened? Exactly like in the Satipatthana Sutta. When feeling arises, away. Feeling can also be a form of sensation. Fear is a negative feeling or sensation. Anger also a negative emotion. Then you develop the understanding through observation. As a human being, you know, before you get angry, before you manifest that fear, you have no fear. You have no anger. Then how did fear arise? Through your senses, through your wrong view, sakkayaditti, that condition you to stir your mind and react. That's why when you stir your mind, anger arise, fear arise. Then when you stay with it, do not feed it with any more wrong thought. What happened? That's why awareness-based meditation is very powerful. When you are with the pure awareness, it's a purifying force. Everything melt within and disintegrate. Then like what Jay Krishnamurti say, the very flowering of that emotion or that thought is the very ending of that emotion or that thought. Maybe fear, anger, or whatever. Even insecurity, phobia, whatever, it exists. Then you will come to a great realization. They are not intrinsic within your nature. They are dependent, originating mind state. Born of nature's law, wrong view, wrong understanding, thought projection. And then you see very clearly the universal characteristics. That's why he said the five aggregate of form and mind, they have the universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, and anatta. So all this, through awareness-based meditation, you can penetrate and you can develop the understanding. And because of that, the final meaning of anatta is emptiness, sunyata, empty nature or existence, means no reality. But everything is dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena. Arise, pass away, arise, pass away. How real can it be? And that is the present moment awareness. The only reality in life. So life is not what you think. That's why that word anatta includes sunyata, or empty nature of existence. So all phenomena, you can penetrate that realization through your direct seeing or the realization within your awareness-based meditation, the awareness nature, then you awaken. You realize the profound, deep characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, anatta. Then no more problem. Then the phenomenal world, which is dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena, has no more power over you. The phenomenal world of consciousness and form, they will collapse in front of you. They will have no more power over you. That's how you develop the understanding and free your mind. Okay, we go back to the notes, then I will read through to let you develop the understanding together. Okay, I have finished that part. The Buddha's teaching on anatta as presented in the Theravada tradition also gives the same meaning for anatta as non-self or empty nature of all phenomena, or sunyata, means everything is empty, not what you think, not so real. Means no reality. empty nature existence. For whatever that is impermanent, this one you must listen. For whatever that is impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity that we can cling on to, clung on to, and say this is me, or these are mine. That is, they cannot be owned or possessed. Just like our physical body, it goes the way of nature. It's of the nature to grow old, get sick, and die. When consciousness separates from the form, the condition that manifests the living being or the human being, no more. Because ultimately, they are all mind-make and empty. Because form and mind are all condition-arising phenomena. Hence, he know you, he know me. Also, the Buddha always say, rupang anicchang, rupang anatta. Before something exists in space, there is only space or emptiness. So form, which occupies the empty space later, does not have a different characteristics with the empty space. So in space, you are able to see and understand the principle of emptiness and hence not yet attached. If we go direct into the mind, then we will know that all knowing comes from mind. As mind is the forerunner of all things, so everything is only consciousness, appearing and disappearing. So how real can it be? This is the reason why it is empty. It is just a mental image conjured by consciousness, which is like a great magician, as explained by the Buddha, via his analogy of the five aggregate of form and mind. So with this explanation, I think it's clear. But for some who may be new people who have not followed my class, I may explain it one more time so that it's clearer to you. You see, everything that we come to perceive within nature can be an external form or whatever. Yeah. So I will use the whiteboard. So what happened is, before you perceive anything, originally there was just space. Yeah. Like I always say, space. Yeah. So within that space, most of us, the first time before you know science, you will always say, space is empty. Yeah, you cannot see anything. You cannot perceive anything. So basically, space is like empty. But those who know science, they know our planet Earth, we got an environment. So they say, no, space is not empty. Yeah. It has its content, oxygen, maybe about 20%, and nitrogen, the other 80%. Then there are rare gases, about 1% or so. So 1 plus 19 plus maybe 79 point something, it make up 100%. But we are not talking about space as within the environment. We are talking about space as it is. When you travel beyond our atmospheric space, you will reach outer space, where it's really empty, where gravity also not there. Yeah. When you escape from the escape velocity that can allow gravity to pull you back, then, like the spaceship, you will leave the planet and you will reach outer space. So what happened is, initially that space is empty. Then you put in an object. So this object occupied the same space. This object occupied the same space. So when you look at this object, this so-called form that occupied the space earlier on, form does not differ from emptiness. Do you see that? This form and this empty space, they occupy the same space. So form does not differ from the empty space. That's why emptiness does not differ from form. So if you see it clearly, then you will come to know why in the Heart Sutta he says form does not differ from emptiness, and emptiness does not differ from form. They occupy the same space. Understand that? Then when it comes to form is emptiness, emptiness is form. And this part is more difficult to understand. This part, you need to penetrate the direct seeing, the realization that you can actually come to a great awakening that comprehend clearly everything that arises within nature is dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomena, not a permanent, unchanging entity. And then you will see clearly why form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. So take for example this table or this solid chair or building. We take the table for example. So this table, if you were to perceive it through the normal seeing or mundane seeing, then you can touch it, feel it, the solidity of it. But then, do you know how does this table come into existence, come into being? There are causes and conditions behind its arising. You remember what the Buddha taught? He said, this table, you need causes and conditions for it to arise. So, as a lay person, it's easy to understand that. What do you need to make a table? You need the raw material. You need to gather them. Then you need a skilled carpenter, or maybe now automation. Yeah? You can get the machine to do it for you. Yeah? Then they assemble them, all the parts. Then they finish it. Then it becomes a finished item, a table. Then they offer it to the public for sale. Then if somebody buy it, put it in the house, like what I did in the early days, then this table exists. Understand now? To you is solid, real. But do you know that this is condition arising? If nobody do it, it never existed. If nobody put up for sale, if I don't buy it, it will not be here. So this part is very important. So what the Buddha did was, he taught the monk during his time an analogy which is a lot easier to understand. He told the monk, he said, look at the block cut. He said, there is a block cut. Then he asked the monk, what do you see? Oh, everybody said, block cut. Okay. He said, then, please, go and dismantle the parts. Take them out. Then lay them down. What do you see? The block cut is no more, no. Then he said, okay. Go and assemble it back. Then, exists again, no arisal. So what do you understand? So the Buddha, through the analogy, make it very clear. This bulokka, when all the parts come together, and it can perform a function, you give it a name and a concept, then it exists under some bulokka. But is it real? No, it's dependent originating, condition arising. When the causes and condition no more, when you disassemble it, it does not perform a function, and you cannot give it a name, there is no more. It's like don't exist, gone. So he said, externally, that block art like this table is condition arising, dependent originating, not what you think. That's why this one is impermanent. This one is dependent originating, condition arising, not a permanent unchanging entity. Its existence depends on causes and conditions behind. So what happened is, after this, he explained to the monk, how do you know it's a blockade? Even this table, now I ask you, how do you know it's a table? You know, isn't it, through what I have shared with you. We are a conscious being, we have the senses with us. So with these senses, like our eye, we can see and we can perceive. Through memory, we retrieve. That's why through perception, we come to know. And what is perception? Perception is just a mental image in your mind. So knowing how you come to know the block card or the table, the inquiry you must have is, externally, is already not so real, dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena, not a permanent unchanging entity. Then how do you know it's a block card? It's a table. It's only an image within your consciousness, though. And how real can be that image? And yet, living being deludedly cling, attach, and grasp. Externally, already not so real, not what you think. We are dependent originating. Then how do you know that it's a block card and a table? It's just an image. It is even more unreal. The image is not tangible, not solid. That image, when you close your eye, is gone. No more. So how real can it be? But then living beings, through their delusion and foolishness, because they cannot see this through their pure awareness nature, the direct seeing, they become deceived. They cling, they grasp to all the external form through their perception. Then through their senses, they feel it like real, solid. Just like the physical body. How can you say this is not you? Like the external form. How can you deny that it's not real, does not exist? But because you cannot see with the direct seeing, the penetrative understanding to awaken that these are all dependent origination entity, condition arising entity, phenomena. Then how do you come to know? The knowing is always from the mind to your aggregates of mind. Mainly the image that perceive, the mental formation, the mental image that you labor. So what you see is just an image, even more unreal. Then externally, it's already unreal, not what you think, because it's dependent originating, condition arising, sustained by causes and condition, not a permanent unchanging entity, it come and it go, just like the physical body, your physical body. It goes the way of nature. So seeing all this, then you realize that form is actually empty. No reality. That's why we say existence or life is not what you think. It's empty nature of existence. Everything that you come to experience, you may think is real, but it's just memory. Without memory, without mind to hold on to it, it doesn't exist. Without that mundane activity of perception, thought, process, sankhara activity, nothing exists. All these are not what you think, unreal. That's why it is anatta, non-self. So the universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, and anatta can be perceived or awakened to clearly if you develop stability of mindfulness. Then the only way to do it is to have continuous mindfulness so that you can have the direct seeing to see clearly every phenomenon. The moment of its arising, sustaining, and passing away, there and then, within that moment. When you see it arising, sustaining, and passing away, when you can see very clearly every phenomena is like that, every phenomena, whether it's nature's phenomena, physical phenomena, or mental phenomena, they exhibit the same universal characteristic, then you see what they call Dhamma. You realize the truth, which is the teaching. Then you realize everything has this universal characteristic. Empty, not what you think. If all these are empty, how can you be real? Your form and mind also same. When you really silence everything without thought, who are you? You are nothing. Because there is no duality, no thought, no word, no concept, nothing. It's just that nature. And what is that nature? It's not a being. It cannot come out and live life. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity. It's not you. That's why the pure awareness nature is a nature that is just away. It cannot think, cannot do anything. But there is a nature within, and from there thought arise, mental phenomena arise. So all this creation from the pure awareness nature into the mundane five aggregate of form and mind that project through the senses into the phenomenal world of consciousness. That process of creation, you must develop the awareness-based meditation to observe and see clearly how all this come to be. Then when you see its manifestation, you will know its illusion. That's why the phenomenal world of consciousness is illusionary. Like the great magician, illusionist, create illusion for you to see. Not so real, not what you think. But living being through their sakayadity, self-delusion, grasp, cling, and hold on to all this, and entangle themselves to cause so much suffering to their mind, mental. So this is the more penetrative understanding. To have the direct seeing, to awaken to the true meaning of anicchang, dukkang, and anatta. Okay, so we cover that. Huh? Then we go to the next part. Part 3. Okay, part 3. The three universal characteristics are anicchang, dukkang, and anatta. So this one is an extension of part 2. Huh? All phenomena, whether physical, mental, or nature's phenomena, they exhibit these three universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, and anatta, or what we call impermanent suffering state and non-self or empty nature. Take for example, our in and out breath, our footstep, our heartbeat, our sensation or feeling, our perception, our thoughts and consciousness, and our bodily vibration, etc. When you are mindful, aware, you can feel them all. This one that I mentioned, your in and out breath, it happens every moment. When you can be with it, breathing in aware, breathing out aware, that is anapanasati that the Buddha taught. Then you can feel it, that there is this movement, the in and out, means the coming and the going, the birth and the death, even our footstep. Yeah. But when they teach you walking meditation, it is a bit strange. It has become a verbalization. You were taught the traditional way of standing, intending to walk, then lifting, pushing, all this. But the real movement is the step. You must see its birth and death, arising and passing away. Your breath also same. The in-breath, when you are away, when it finish, gone. Then it has to breathe out. Otherwise, you cannot be a living being. So, breathing in and breathing out is the birth and death of your breath. The footstep also same. Born and die. Means, from the standing posture, you transit into a walking posture. So when you walk, you're mindful, you're aware, you can see the movement, the birth of that step. Then when it reach the end, there is the ending. That's like born, die, like the living being. Except footstep is faster. Our breath is faster. Then feeling also same, come and go, like bubble, pop, gone. Then perception also same, perceive, gone. Then another senses, another perception, then it pass away again. Then our thought, our sankara, our emotion, good feeling, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling. Yeah. Then all the, what they call, sensation or mind state, yeah, whether it's tranquil, peaceful, or agitated, restless, emotional, with fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, phobia, insecurity. All these are the manifestation of the sankhara mind state. Then you have the mental formation, mental intention, your planning, scheming. So all these are within your form and mind. Then every moment of consciousness, seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, and thought, they come and they go. And every part of your body, you are mindful, aware, there is vibration all over. Yeah. You don't need to use the stethoscope to feel your heartbeat. You are mindful. You have sensitivity of mindfulness. Your mindfulness has developed. You can be aware of your own heartbeat without the stethoscope. Yeah. Then all of the vibration between your within your bodily formation, they are very clear. So all this, they are all continuously arising and passing away, following nature's law. Are you sensitive enough to feel it, to be aware of it? So see their arising or appearing and disappearing, their birth and death, their rise and fall, and the moment of its arising, sustain, and its disappearance, clearly within the silent mind, or pure awareness nature. This is what we call the direct seeing, to awaken to the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta, so as to break free from your self-delusion or sakadity. See clearly its condition arising phenomena. That is how, when condition arise, the phenomena comes to be, and how when the supporting causes and condition for its sustenance are still there, then the phenomena will continue to exist, and how when any of the supporting condition ceases to be, then it will lead to the disappearance or cessation of that phenomena. This will lead to the comprehension of its impermanent and non-self or empty nature clearly. Then you will come to the understanding that if you try to hold or cling on to things or want them your way, which is not nature's way, suffering will come to be. This is how you react to your sense perception via delusion or wrong view. The conditions of evil root to arise. Evil roots are the roots of all evil, your greed, hatred, and delusion. Hence, they have the power to condition you into negativity via your evil action, speech, and thought process. This is the reason why heedfulness to understand all of this is very important. And with heedfulness, you will be able to constantly investigate the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha to confirm that they are true. Hence, re-establishing your faith and reaffirming your right view. That's why mindfulness is very important, leading to heedfulness, apamada. So, without mindfulness, without the awareness-based meditation to stabilize your inner awareness, you cannot awaken, you cannot penetrate the teaching. Then the Buddha Puja or Buddhist devotional practice as taught by the Buddha are also very useful practices recommended by the Buddha to help us develop the five spiritual faculties of Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya, needed for us to receive and understand his spiritual teaching more easily. So silence your mind to do the Buddha Puja with very strong faith to develop the confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. We are understanding who he is and how special and great a being he is. Then bow mindfully, pay your respect. This will develop the very strong, calm and composed mind, leading to the establishment of virya and sati. Then with the strong sadha and virya, you can bow mindfully to pay respect, to develop the reverential salutation to the Buddha. When you do this, you can decondition the heedless thinking that you have arisen throughout the day, thereby calming the mind to develop a stable sati or mindfulness within. That's why a good religious routine is very important, or your daily religious routine, which will include your morning puja when you wake up or before you sleep, then in between whenever you are free. The reason being, this constant bowing and chanting of the Buddha's name as practiced or cultivated by the Mahayana can also help develop a very strong sadha, leading to the virya and sati needed to develop the wisdom, where these are spiritual faculties. There are also many benefits that can arise, because the bowing or reverential salutation is also a meritorious action, one of the 10 meritorious actions. Then apart from developing the faith, we can also make use of these merits to make the necessary aspiration to walk the path of Dhamma smoothly by avoiding the foolish and only meet out with the wise and the enlightened one, so that Nibbana can be realized as soon as possible. when we bow mindfully with very strong faith, sadha, and virya, our mind is very calm and very composed, thereby helping us to develop a very stable mindfulness or sati much more easily. And it also leads us to cultivate humility. At the same time, we exercise our body. Sati is awareness before the knowing or the arising of thought, just a pure awareness nature within. So this bowing should be done with understanding. That is, we bow to establish mindfulness or awareness without thought, so that the body and mind move as one, in perfect synchrony and harmony. Once mindfulness has been established, use it to cultivate the four postures of standing, walking, sitting, and lying down, then followed by the cultivation of sati sampajana, or mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action and all movement in the present moment, to develop the initial wisdom, or some call it the vipassana wisdom, born of the direct seeing of the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta. So you can also include contemplation, because the first turning wisdom, which is sutamaya panya, can also give rise to understanding through listening, if you have your past. Then when you contemplate and reflect, you develop the contemplative wisdom, which is a second turning wisdom, leading to chintamaya panya. Then when you develop mindfulness to awaken through the direct seeing or the bhavana maya panya wisdom, to arise the bhavana maya panya wisdom, means wisdom born of bhavana practices or the meditative training. That one, some like to call it vipassana wisdom, where that is more penetrative. So vipassana wisdom, or what we call the yoniso manasikara, initial wisdom born of the three turnings, they can be developed. Then after that, the Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundation of mindfulness, explain what are the other practices that you need to do. Then only then can we proceed with the contemplation of the four elements, the 32 parts of the body, and the 9 stages of cemetery, decomposition, contemplation, to finish off the first foundation of Kayanupassana. So under Kayanupassana, the four elements are also very important. The 32 parts are also very important. The 9 stages of cemetery decomposition are also very important. But the way I understand it is different. Because when you contemplate on the four elements, means this physical body, the rupa side, that is, to me, very easy, no consciousness. So how can it be you? That's why it goes the way of nature. That if it's just a physical body, and the Buddha has subdivided into four basic elements, not like the scientists, they got 100 over elements, that one is too complicated. Maybe for the scientists it's very useful. But for us to understand life, we only need to subdivide into four basic elements, which the Buddha has taught under his teaching. He said, there is this Pathavi, or what he called earth element, the solidity part. Then there is this Apo, liquid aspect of the element, fluidity. Then there is this Vayu, the wind element. So this wind element, they are needed for us to maintain an erect posture and all those things. Of course, we also need the bone structure, the vertebra and all those things. So, Pathavi, Apo, Vayo, and Tejo. Tejo is the heat element. We need the heat element to maintain the temperature and all those things. So all these four are very simple classification. That's why when we understand and see clearly it's only the four elements, without consciousness, it is only rupa. It goes the way of nature. It cannot be you. Yeah. Then after that, he moved on to the 32 parts. So to me, the 32 part, when you observe them, it's just like you go through the block cut, all the pieces. When you assemble them together and it perform a function, then the human being or the physical body become alive, exists with the consciousness trapped inside. So when the parts, any of the important vital organ fail, or they call destroyed, then it's not able to perform the function. Then you say die. The consciousness cannot continue to stay inside. It will leave. So the separation of consciousness from the form will lead to the dissolution of the so-called human being or living being or the five aggregates of form and mind. Yeah. So all these are very clear. Then the last one, the nine stages of 7-3 decomposition, is to let you see clearly when the physical body dies, the consciousness leaves. When the physical body is devoid of consciousness, it will go the way of nature. It will experience decay. That's why you contemplate on the nine stages of cemetery decomposition. Then it will root out your delusion, your craving, your lust for the physical form, the beautiful form, or the youthful form. Because ultimately, like we all experience, it goes the way of nature. Everything that is born, it will reach what they call a stage where you no longer grow. You will start to decay. Or we call it the plateauing off. Then the decaying process is the aging part. Aging part. Then in between, you can develop disease or injury and other type of complication. That's why this physical body of ours is of the nature to grow old, go through decay, experience disease, sickness, and ultimately, when consciousness separates, you see death. So, seeing all this, then your craving to the youthful form, the beautiful form, all is an illusion. Whatever that you attach to, cling on to memory, as you grow old, as you go through the aging or decay process and experience old age, then sickness and impending death. Most people will be afflicted, miserable. So when they are afflicted and miserable, what do? They recall their early youth when they were very healthy, very strong. But all these are already gone, no more reality. You cannot go back and relive your life. Because these are moment to moments life experiences that every individual has to go through. So as you go through, if you develop the Dhamma understanding early, then you need not suffer, like the Buddha said. Well, these are realities of life and existence. Not only you go through, each and every living being has to confront them with Dhamma, understanding and wisdom. Then only you don't suffer. Otherwise, you will suffer. You will have attachment. You will lament. You will develop sorrow. So all these are beautiful Dhamma understanding. Okay, we will end. I think we finish. I read the last part. Only then can we proceed with the contemplation of the four elements, the 32 parts within our physical body of ours, and the 9 stages of 7-3 decomposition, contemplation, to finish off the whole Kaya Anupassana cultivation. After Kaya Anupassana, we then proceed to Vedana Anupassana, Chitta Anupassana, followed by Dhamma Anupassana, finally. Yeah. Okay, so we finish. Yeah? This awareness-based meditation, you must develop the understanding. Yeah. For people who are not familiar, maybe you should listen to the last Thursday class sharing, which Sui has already sent out. Listen to it attentively. That one, I purposely re-explain the whole thing because there are quite a number of new people who only heard my video sharing and read up a bit of what my books are. So not easy for you all to develop the understanding. And like what happened to most of them, they are familiar with the thought-based approach, which they always do without that clear understanding that these are all thought-based approach meditation. And thought-based approach, you are limited by the instrument which is thought. And you meditate to realize the Dhamma which is beyond thought. So you ask yourself, how is it possible? It's not possible. So in order not to fall into that trap, I explain why most people, before they come to the understanding of what this awareness-based meditation is, they got no other choice. Because they don't have the stability or spiritual faculty to decondition their heedless thinking to develop the what they call mind that is in the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness. But if you have stabilized your spiritual faculty, then your saddha virya leading to sati samadhi will be very stable. Then with sati and samadhi, you will be able to develop the direct seeing to arise the wisdom of panya. Then when these 5 spiritual faculties are there, you are in the meditative state straight away, where there is no more mental hindrance to hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness. That's why for us, we can go into the meditative state very easily. We just relax, silent, then we are in. Sometimes within seconds. Some who are quite new, maybe it will take a few minutes. But give it a try. So for those who follow the traditional thought-based approach, sometimes you need to go through it because you are not familiar with the new way. So you find it more comfortable to use your object of meditation to let you develop the training of the mind so that you can stay with your object of meditation and your thought doesn't wander off. Otherwise, the thought wanders off very fast because you don't have the stability of mindfulness, the spiritual faculty to bring about that state. That state, which is the meditative state, is actually your sati and samadhi. Yeah. So the free mind that is in sati and samadhi, without focusing, without the conditioned state of one-pointedness, absorption, and all those things is very different from the traditional thought-based meditation that need object of meditation, methods and techniques, a series of instructions to do things, a lot of verbalization and all those things. So listen to that, develop the understanding, then try out the awareness-based meditation. Develop the four support. Relax body and mind. Don't try to know, don't try to do. Yet the trying to know and the trying to do is always by the thought. So can you just relax and allow the mindfulness or awareness to arise? Then maintain the awareness. So these first two support is very important. Relax every part of your body and mind. Be at ease. Then maintain awareness. Means the awareness within. Whatever arises within your six sense door, maintain awareness. Don't try to know, don't try to perceive, don't let it proliferate into thought process and all those things. Because that will create more thinking, more thought. Then you are not developing the inner awareness. So relax, maintain awareness. Then stabilize the awareness. Continue to relax and maintain the awareness. So sometimes you need to develop mindfulness by being with your breathing. You can. Or your object of meditation. You can silence everything and stay there. But don't focus and concentrate. You just let the mind settle down. When you are just relaxed and maintaining the awareness, that is the mind that is able to develop sati. So when that sati stabilizes, your mind will enter sati on its own. And then very easy to be in the meditative state. Then wherever you locate it, the mindfulness will arise by itself. Okay, so I will set the alarm for 45 minutes. Then you can continue with your awareness-based meditation. You can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. For these are the mind state that can make your mind consistently develop the meditative state of inner awareness, inner mindfulness. Then use it to live life, to develop the stability of daily mindfulness so that you are mindful in the midst of life. So from there, you can become heedful. To be heedful, you must develop the stability of mindfulness until mind enters sati. Means you are ever mindful. Then constantly in the meditative state. That's why Dhammapada verse 23. The ever mindful, constantly meditative and steadfast one, they will realize the supreme bond-free Nibbana. So mindfulness leading to heedfulness is very important. Okay, now we open up for meditation reporting and question and answer. You can ask me, report your meditation, or ask me any question regarding the meditation or today's Heart Sutta topic that we share, on form is emptiness and emptiness is form.
Brother Namo Buddhaya. Brother Wong here.
Brother Wong, yes.
I have been for the past few days practicing the trying to practice open awareness. I dropped the noting, verbalization noting.
Okay.
I found that for a while, my attentiveness go over to my heart area.
Okay.
I feel that I'm in the center of the of everything. I have a feeling that I'm right in the center and watching over my own internal senses and also external. So
okay.
a bit of a heartbeat. I also found that very I found a very strong heartbeat in the process of meditation, very heartbeat, very clear, and a lot of joy arising day on. It dragged for a while I lost count of time, and time passes very fast in that.
Okay, I ask you one more thing. When
yes.
you are able to feel your heartbeat,
mm-hmm.
are you able to relax into it?
Not able to. I'm still standing outside and observing because tradition, I've been observing.
Don't worry. I just want to find out more details so that I know what you are going through. Because what happened is,
yes,
you are using a bit of focusing the mind. So the mind actually, you say, went to the heart area, is because you try to stay there. So initially the best thing is don't try to stay there. Well, initially before you stabilize your awareness nature, you try to stay there means your we call it the thought movement. There is still thought without you knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
That thought is trying to stay there or focus there. So initially, don't worry. Eh? What happens is when you do that, your mind will be there. So it's a more subtle way of doing the meditative training by attending to somewhere, means you let your mind stay somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, no harm. But what you need to do is when you are able to stay there for quite a while, relax. The key word is relax, body and mind. Once you can relax into it, then it becomes a free mind. Then that focusing, which you are not aware of, they will start to dissipate. The pure awareness based meditation will start to develop. So initially the mind wander off or what, don't worry, because what happened to you is if you don't use some form of focusing or centering your mind somewhere, your mind cannot stay there. Because you don't have that training, you don't have that ability to be in that state. So the spiritual faculty is developed with understanding. Maybe sadda and virya, you can develop it. The faith in the teaching. Otherwise, you will not go all out to learn this teaching. So the faith can come in the form of understanding the uniqueness of the Buddha's quality. He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. And his teaching is a very unique Dhamma that can enable living beings to develop the enlightenment, to free the mind, to develop the enlightenment in the here and the now, so that suffering need not be. So when you understand how unique and special the Buddha is and how unique and special the teaching is, your faith becomes very strong. Then you want to learn this teaching, it will drive you. Then your virya will arise. Well, this virya will actually enable you to have a spiritual tenacity within, or what we call zeal, spiritual zeal, Z-E-A-L, to go this way. Then you will go all out to cultivate. But last time, because you don't have the clear understanding of what awareness-based or sati-based meditation is, you have been using the rising and falling or the mahasi type of noting and verbalization type of thought-based approach to training the mind. So what they do is they will have a series of instruction for you to do certain things. That's why he will tell you to note this, note that. Then you verbalize without knowing what is going on. So that phase you have spent a lot of time is because in the past you also have been learning this type of practice and promoting this type of practice. That's why when the time comes for you to be born in this life, you will have the causes and conditions to go back to this type of teaching. But you also have your parami and affinity with the true teaching. That's why you can come across my website. And when you listen to what I share, which is so different from what you have been taught and learned, and yet you can be interested in, means in the past you have affinity with the true teaching, the true Dhamma. That's why then with the new understanding, you give it a try and you can do what you do, which is already very good. Yeah, like you say, you drop the verbalization, all those things, then you find that the awareness go to your heart. It's actually not the awareness go to your heart. You try to develop a new way of like centering your mind. Like
anchoring the mind.
Centering and anchoring the mind. Because like I said, most of them, they cannot do it. Why? Because their mental hindrance are there. Their like and dislike, habitual tendency, pleasant and unpleasant reaction to sense experience, that one still very strong. They don't have the initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara, to be at peace. Because when you have the yoniso manasikara, the wisdom at the moment of sense experience, this one will surface and prompt you on at the moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, then you realize your mind different from last time already. It does not stir and react like before already. Then when it does not stir and react like before, means sensual desire and ill will, or like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant reaction to sense experience, like attenuated, mitigated. So once you are able to do that, means most of the time you are at peace already. You have more equanimous mind. And that is a good sign. Yeah? That is, you have space between thought. Means every moment of sense experience, because you didn't stir, you didn't react, you didn't have the habitual mental hindrance generation. You don't generate anymore like and dislike and pleasant and unpleasant. Then you become like more at peace with the moment. Then you can slowly, slowly accept the reality, because the Dhamma will prompt you. Sabbe sankara anicang, sabbe sankara dukkang, sabbe Dhamma anatta. Then everything is dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. Like the Buddha said, whatever arise, there are causes and conditions behind. And this is the reality based on nature's law, the Panchaniyama. It cannot be otherwise. If you want things your way, you suffer. Not able to get what you want, dukkha arise. So through this understanding, you establish your mind. That's why that type of mind can become peaceful, calm, and aware naturally. Where yoniso manasikara is there already. Then your sati will become more stable, because space between thought, you have to learn this. You will see it in your awareness. The space is that space which is without thought.
Yeah.
When one thought arises, because human beings who are Hitler, they think a lot. There is no space at all.
Yeah.
That thought like cannot stop one. Like you got no way of don't want to think one. When you don't want to think, it become worse. Yeah. More thought arise. Yeah. So Hitler's thinking, habitual tendency that developed through the lack of yoniso manasikara will condition the cultivator or the meditator's mind to every time wander off. That's why they cannot stay still. So you need to use an object of meditation to anchor it, like you come to know, or verbalize to fix your mind.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you will wander off.
You run off, yeah.
So now what happened to you is there's a great improvement already. You don't verbalize, you don't labor, you don't use any more verbalization or thought. Then you relax, maintain awareness, but you don't know how to relax. So your relaxation is not stable. Yeah. Relax means physically you feel yourself completely relaxed. Like when you are very tired, completely relaxed. Until no tension, no stress. You are at ease. Yeah. Then mentally, nothing disturb you. Right? You don't have something to like keep on haunting you or reminding you of things like, am I doing it correctly? Or sometimes, why am I wasting my time here? Then sometimes your all those memory, your unfinished activity of your daily life, they will come. If you're supposed to contact this person, you're supposed to deliver what your office, or if you are retired, then maybe you have your duty. So certain things that you need to do, you want to do, but you don't know how to develop the mindfulness to attend to all this. So what normally I teach the Kayamita is to write down so that you don't commit so much to memory. Because when you commit too much to memory, this memory is the one that creates the thinking. Then whatever you accumulate, it will become your memory. So this memory are like unfinished activity or business. You want to remember, you want it to be reminded. So what happens is thought will arise. That thought will be created to respond to all this accumulated memory that you have not resolved. So without wisdom and mindfulness, you cannot resolve it at the mind level. So the best way is to write them down so that you don't have to remember. And when you don't have to remember, you migrate from the old way of memory creating activity to a free mind that is not dependent on memory anymore. The memory that you have, the old memory, they are there. Don't worry. It's like the computer. Yeah? You know, the computer has the RAM, random access memory, and the read-only memory. So random access memory means like all the things that you want to remember, you don't hold it in the brain and the memory. You retrieve it like the computer. That's why the computer got no emotion, no fear, no worry, nothing. Whatever it needs, you go and retrieve. Understand? Yeah. So a person who has developed mindfulness and yoniso manasikara will be like that computer in the sense that whatever they need, they recall. So to recall, you need something to remind you. So what you need is, you don't go and commit to memory and try to use your brain activity or thought process to recollect. You go to the note. Then once you read, it will trigger off the condition for you to remember. So the recollection come from that thing that you write down, which is not memory. So that is hateful living. You live life in a different way, different from the heedless living. Where the heedless living, you think a lot on, you commit a lot to memory. Sometimes you hold too much thing until your mind cluttered, until there is like so much tension inside there. Then stress develop and all those things. But if your mind is relatively free and you don't hold on to anything, whatever you want to do you right now, then you attend to them one by one. After you finish, tick, cross it out. Finish, tick, cross it out. And then you realize the burden of having to remember thing or using the thought, heedless living, will start to disappear. Then you realize your mind is most of the time free, like empty, no need to hold on to anything. Anything, your appointment or you want to remember, you write it down. Then this will help a lot. Then most of the time, your mind is free. Then when you become used to it, you become familiar with this way of heedful living, then to your surprise, whatever you develop awareness of, like you go through your notes or those things that you have jot down, once you go through, you don't need to commit to memory or no. It will come and prompt you. When the time comes, something will arise. Then you will recall. Then it will not haunt you like before. Every time try to remind you, try to remind you, try to. Especially people with problem. If you can develop this understanding, it will help you. Got problem means, like a person, he may have disease or sickness or financial problem, and all these things can haunt them, create worry or fear in them. Then when there is attachment to certain things also, that thought keep on haunting them on. Then when they want to meditate, they cannot meditate on because that unfinished business, that fearful thought, that unresolved issue keep on coming back to haunt them as thought. So when you can see this, then you will understand what attachment is. Attachment means you have not resolved it. You allow it to stay in the brain and you create fear, phobia out of it. Because you worry about it. So mindfulness is to see all this. When you see all this, then you develop a new way of living life, doing things, so that you don't have to go through the old way, so that the mind is not cluttered. So now I will go back to your reporting, which is very important. So now you know that there is still some form of focusing, which is a good improvement over the old way of verbalizing and all those things and noting. Now you, technically you think you relax, but your relaxation is not deep enough. Well, relaxation, when you really understand, can be very deep and very beautiful. When you really know how to relax, there is no thought on. We are physically and mentally got no issue, I understand. I say, mentally relaxed means got no more problem, I understand. No more unfinished business to attend to. And sometimes I will teach the Kayamita who attend retreat. I say, you already make the decision to register for the retreat. About 9 days. So you tell yourself, or you talk to your mundane mind, the thinking mind, is it, have mercy on me. Within this retreat, I don't want to think about problem. I don't want to attend to all those worldly things that I supposed to attend to. I already committed. So I will make full use of my time to train my mind, to develop the mindfulness, the stability of sati, so that I can develop the wisdom, I can insight into phenomena, awaken and develop the direct seeing and the clear understanding, so that it benefits me. Then whenever you try to relax, maintain awareness and meditate, if the thought come in, see it, understand or not? Then tell the thought, enough. I will attend to it after the retreat, when I'm out of the retreat. You talk to the thought, after a few times, it will not come and haunt you anymore. Otherwise, it keep on coming to remind you. So these are the skillful means that you can adopt initially. So for you now, you can do what you do already. Never mind, you can continue with that. But remember, every time you are in that state, like you report just now, actually there are some form of focusing there. So relax into it. Understand?
Yeah.
Relax into it means you try. Then when you relax into it, you realize the body and the mind, when it's really relaxed, the thought completely gone. The thought completely gone. Then the focusing also gone. Then for the first time in your life, you will experience the silent, the true mind, without thought. Realize that. Then you will progress very fast.
Thank you very much.
Don't try to know, like I said, because from your description, there is some focusing. You still try to know a lot of things. You still describe. You like you are the center of whatever you see, your own word, inside, outside. All these are words, not important. Understand? The true mind that realize, no need word. It will understand everything by itself. Then you will use your own word to describe to me. No more of all these Dhamma word that people frequently use. Okay? Can follow,
Okay.
Sadhu. Very good. I rejoice. So you keep on with your training. Then develop more understanding of how to relax. Then that one can help you a lot. When you really know how to relax, your mind completely without thought.
Okay, so, thank you.
Thank you, sadhu. Let us rejoice. Sadhu. Then, do you have any more questions or you wants to report further on anything that you have developed regarding what we share today?
Brother Teo, besides this, I also feel that a lot of sensitivities on the body are clearer. And
When you can detect the movement, the vibration, all those things, that is very good. Means your sati has improved. Otherwise, you cannot detect one. The other thing that you can try to find out is when you are now doing it in the sitting posture, isn't it?
Yeah, sitting posture, yes.
Never mind. Later on, when you become more stable, I will suggest you try the lying down posture. Lying down posture is a very relaxed posture. Because when you don't cross your leg, you don't create what they call energy blockage at your leg there. Well, at the place you cross your leg, the chi flow will actually be blocked. But if you know how to relax, then of course it can go through. But most people, they cannot sit too long because when you cross your leg, the flow of chi is not smooth. Then you don't know how to relax, they develop pain. They develop what they call tension. Then sometimes it's numbness and all those things. Then other thing that will come and disturb them is pain is one of them. Then itchiness, then other type of sensation and all those things. So what happened is the old way that you all learn is you all go and note that pain or that itchiness or thinking. Well, that one actually introduced more thought. That one introduced more verbalization. So you are not aware. And not knowing that all these negative feelings like pain, itchiness, are unpleasant feelings that you want to push away, understand? You try to do something to like overcome it. So what is being taught to you is to verbalize until the mind becomes dull, then hopefully it's gone. But no, where you are creating more mental hindrance. Mental hindrance like sensual desire and ill will means it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness or awareness. That's why the sati cannot come in. Okay. So what you should do is accept that sensation. Whether it's painful sensation or itchiness or whatever, or even fear, emotion or whatever, you just accept it, at peace with it. Like what the Buddha said, whatever arises, there are causes and conditions behind. These are nature's law. This is the reality, what is. So if I accept, means I'm at peace. I don't react, I don't stir, I don't label it. So if I don't label it, means no more unpleasant feeling. No more sensual desire or ill will to push it away or do something to it. So when mental hindrance is no more, then there is nothing to hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness or mindfulness. Then that time, your sati will take over. When you can relax and maintain equanimity or the relaxed state of awareness, then maintaining awareness will take over. Then when that mindfulness or sati is being developed, then you realize your mind become very calm, very peaceful, with no thought, no sensual desire, no ill will, no mental hindrance, then you are at peace. Then for the first time, you will experience the shift in consciousness from the agitated thinking, heedless reaction to sense experience and habitual tendency to a peaceful state of tranquility and stillness. So that is the realization of your true mind, your silent mind. Where that sati, when it's stabilized, it becomes the silent mind. It become your true mind. Then you experience pity. Then you will feel joy and other things. So this pity or joy can arise when there is no thought. Your experience of that joy and pity is you use some form of focusing to make the thought like no more there or reduce. But this one is naturally without thought. Because you don't resist, you don't fight. You just aware, be with the mind state, like that sensation. Don't label it as pain. Don't develop aversion towards it. Accept it. Be with it. The awareness and the thing together. Then you realize the awareness is not a thought. That it does not create mental hindrance. And because of that, sati take over. Your spiritual faculty develops. And then your mind become like transformed. You realize your true mind, pure awareness, nature without thought. And that is a free mind without thought. You have to stabilize that. Then after going through a few times, then you realize every mind state that arise, even sleepiness, sloth and torpor, don't resist it, don't fight it. Don't like develop dislike towards it or aversion towards it. Yeah. Be with it. Means accept whatever, like the Buddha said, whatever arise, there are causes and conditions behind. So means I accept. Sloth and torpor arise, I have developed this mental hindrance, is because I have not developed the wisdom to overcome it. And the main reason is you don't have the opposite five spiritual faculty to counter it. That's why the lack of virya will lead to sloth and torpor. Then when you stay there without doing anything, you will get a shock of your life, what will happen. All of a sudden, because not only I can do it, I did it, I think about 30 over years ago, 1988 or 87 or 88. That mind, the consciousness, like suddenly flash through, you know. Then there is bright virya, like an awareness inside there. No? Then the whole sloth and topple gone. No? Then my mind suddenly developed this awareness radiant inside there, which is so bright, you know, so beautiful. Initially, it was a flash. Then the whole sleepiness gone. Then like there is a shift of consciousness. No? Then suddenly, the mind is full of virya. No more sleeping or nothing. That clear, bright mind that is so beautiful and luminous, that one is so aware. You know. Then that one can go and investigate whatever goes on. So pain also same. You endure, you silent, then there will be a shift in consciousness. It will flash through. Then all of a sudden, the whole phenomena of so-called sensation that you label as pain also gone. But when you label, it becomes a hindrance, then you cannot do it. You cannot overcome it. Yeah. But when you don't label, no mental hindrance, then you endure, then all of a sudden it will happen. And that is the real sati-based, awareness-based approach or meditative training. So you
need I can share another experience on my this few days. And I previously when I did labeling tend to take a lot of mental energy.
Yeah, and it will stress you out. Well, that is a mental hindrance.
Yeah.
Then when you labor without you realizing, you create the unpleasant feeling.
Yes.
Because you can note the pain, you can note the itchiness.
Mm.
Yeah, so that verbalization is creating thought. When you create thought, you cannot be in the silent state of sati. Well, our pure awareness state, that mind, our true mind, is without thought. So to be in that state, you cannot even allow the aggregate of mind to come in and create thinking. So that is the understanding, huh? So initially, when you understand all this, you listen to this sharing again, then the last Thursday one also listen to it again, it will help you.
Yes.
Then you, with the new understanding, you approach the meditation with awareness-based training, you will progress very fast. Then everything will fall into place. Sadhu to you.
Sadhu. Thank you.
Yeah. Very good, very good. Okay, good. Anybody else? Oh, another 4 minutes only. 3-4 minutes.
Thank you.
Yeah, ni jiang something, Alicia.
Actually, Virgil, Yichen Bang, woman start a Xue Zhou Chan the Siho, woman, yes, Puhe relax. Go back to Naga basic, mind sweeping.
Mind sweeping method is very good.
Basic,
it releases the tension. You feel the forehead. Then, if you detect any tension or stress within, you relax into it. That relaxation via the mind sweeping method is very good. All the tension will be gone. So, Brother Wong, you will make note of this. You have tried mind sweeping method before, isn't it?
Yeah, is it similar to the Goenka method?
Not really.
Not really. Then I have
that,
not.
That tried. One, actually, his teacher did that. His teacher is the lay person. What is his name already? Goenka's teacher. You remember?
Ubakin.
Ubakin. Ubakin. Yes.
Ubakin, yes.
He is very good. He used the mind sweeping method, but he didn't really sweep very fast or no. Because after you become skillful, familiar, then he sweep very fast. Because that one is using anapanasati to sweep. So what you do is relax body and mind, then silent everything, then you feel your forehead. Yes, you sweep from your forehead down, okay?
All right.
You feel. So normally at your forehead, yeah, you think a lot here. The memory is here. The the perception, everything is here. The consciousness all here. And all your senses, your eye, your ear, your nose, your tongue, and your tactile, together your brain, the six senses are very near. There's a here, a lot of mental activity, a lot of thinking, a lot of thought. So here, people tend to stress out one. The fear, worry, anxiety, the restlessness, the lack of peace, everything at the forehead one. So if you know how to relax that forehead, you feel that you detect any tension, tightness, or stress within, you relax into it until you feel that it's soothingly relaxed. That one very effective. When it's soothingly relaxed, means you really relax. Then you move down to your eye muscle. Well, after a day, very tired activity using your eye, reading, computer, everything. So you relax your ciliary muscle, your eye muscle. Able to relax it is very much. Then you feel good. You feel it soothingly relaxed. Then you come down to your facial muscle. What happened is most people not happy one. The facial muscle very tight one, a lot of stress one. You are not happy, you are not peaceful, you are not relaxed. Understand? So most people, you look at their face, especially at the retreat, very serious, very stressed. So when you can feel your own facial muscle not relaxed, you relax it. And the best way to relax it is to visualize yourself facing a mirror. You have done that before, not? Facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. When you can visualize yourself radiating a radiant smile, when you can smile means what? You have joy, you have happiness. I realize that one very effective. The facial muscle all relax very fast. That's why you do metta, you radiate love. Then you wish people well-being and happiness. May all beings be well and happy. That joy, that radiant smile, really can relax the facial muscle. And then after that, you move it down, sweep it down to your neck, feel, relax. Shoulder, feel, relax. Then you move to your heart, feel, relax. And when you do this, the other good thing is, you can decide to train your mind to locate your awareness at the location you want it to be. You want it to be at the forehead, it stay at the forehead. You want it to be at the eye muscle, it will stay there. You want it to be at the facial muscle, it will stay. Then when you sweep it down to the neck, the shoulder, then the heart, you want it to stay at the heart. That one is not focusing. Once you can do that, means your mindfulness is trained, skillful. You can decide where to locate your mind and stay there. That one is no focusing at all. Your mindfulness has developed the ability to be there. Then that time, you can decide to stay at the heart. Because if you continue to sweep, you can also bring it down to your stomach, then your abdomen, then your buttock, your leg, then you sweep it up. That one is for people to train their ability to relax and maintain awareness at the location they want to be. So that one very helpful. So what Alicia they all went through was the early day where I teach the mind sweeping method. But they cannot do the thought, the awareness based one. But that time, nobody understand actually. I came out too early, 20 years ahead of time, in the year 2004. So that time I teach mind sweeping method. I combine. Then I told them, if you are familiar with the object of meditation or any method or technique, that you are familiar or you are used to, you can also use it. But finally, when you understand, it's only an initial skillful means to train the mind, to anchor the mind. So if you know that it is just for that purpose, you can actually skip it and go straight away into the awareness-based meditation based on the understanding that I have taught. That's why over the years, now I seldom teach mind sweeping method already, or metta and other things. Luckily, Alicia came out and reminded you all, because she also went through that. When she started, she was actually in a very severe depression. She has 16 years of depression at that time, full of gastric disease, sickness, and depressive thought, suicidal thought, and a lot of suffering, misery. But then he came to the class after the first Tuesday class lesson. He kept on chasing after Sui An for the recording until he listened attentively, then followed the instruction and do. You know. And within 3 to 6 months, she came out of the depression. Then psychiatrist also no need to see, the medication also one by one slowly, no need. Yeah. Then she become very different. She developed the Dhamma understanding and her life transformed. And she became so beautiful. After that, she has so much joy in life and her life changed. And her problem all gone, the gastric, the depression all gone. And then the husband very happy, the whole family very happy. And he helped out in many things. And now she is very, very good. So that's why all this training, if you develop the understanding, it will help you a lot. So remember, Brother Wong, try the mind sweeping method. It will help you to relax further. Okay.
Thank you, Brother Teo. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. So we better end. 6:06 already. Thank you so much to Sister Alicia and also Brother Wong for creating the condition for this Dhamma sharing and all this thing. Okay, let us now share merits. Closing puja, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakantu lokasasana ita wata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabbasampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo deo asatu kalena sasa sampati heto cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, you all can now pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Then we end our Sunday session. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.